Hi, I'm Todd Nathanson.
And I'm Lena Morgan.
And this is Song versus Song.
Stop.
And with your head on your feet and your pants on the ground. Crap, I can't remember how it goes. Okay, you got me. Yes, we are doing Song versus Song, and this is a special Dawn of Indie Rock matchup here. We are doing Teenage Riot by Sonic Youth versus Where Is My Mind by the Pixies. And we have a special guest in the studio today from indie rock band and USA Today crossword clue, Echo Astral. We have one JL Holtzman. Would you care to introduce yourself to the audience?
Hi, my name's JL. I am the lead singer and one of the guitar players in a DC punk band called Echo Astral. We've got a record coming out on April 17th, but that's enough promotional cycle for you. Let's just stammer on about some of my favorite songs, because that's why you invited me here. Some of our favorite songs, hopefully.
Lena invited you, and this... Once I checked out your new album, it seemed pretty obvious that you would be a very good guest for this particular matchup. Would you consider either of these bands influences?
Definitely Sonic Youth. Definitely Sonic Youth. Also, shout out Kim Gordon generally. The new album is also fantastic.
I have not had a chance to listen to Kim Gordon's solo album yet, but I've heard good things from the Pitchforks and so on. I feel like... Even if you were about to say, no, I've never listened to Sonic Youth in my life, you were influenced by Sonic Youth, because that is, I mean, indie rock is still the house they built. But it feels weird, because when I started getting into indie rock, Sonic Youth was extremely prominent, and the Pixies were, you know, a band you could be into if you were into indie rock. You know, there was like one of the bands Kurt Cobain liked. Would rep, and it feels like their prominence has completely reversed. Like the Sonic Youth were on The Simpsons, and if it feels like the Pixies would be much more likely to be on The Simpsons in 2024. I think so. Like, we're talking about Where Is My Mind by the Pixies. I heard that in a commercial the other day. I heard Hey by the Pixies in a superhero movie. It was in the Suicide Squad. I feel like Sonic Youth has like kind of retreated to the indie heads portion of, you know, the internet. Am I wrong here?
So, first of all, there is nothing more 2024 than talking about these two bands, or just Generation X music generally.
That is true. That is true enough.
It's a shame to say that both of these bands probably most people only know about through TikTok and Fight Club these days. But
are Sonic Youth big on the TikToks?
Kim Gordon has a viral TikTok hit off her new album.
Really?
Pretty fun.
Oh, man. I do not engage with TikTok because it gives me a headache. I did not know that. That's pretty awesome.
I mean, a lot of shoegaze bands too are having a resurgence on TikTok. I feel like like the youngest generations, like we see at our shows, a lot of younger, especially like queer folks who like come to our shows because honestly, there's like a bit of a synergy between being punk and just being repressed generally in the United States these days. What we see is a lot of lethargy and apathy and the same kind of tinderbox for really loud, buzzed out, freaky rock music that existed in the 90s, especially like early 90s, like post-Reagan. I feel like the Pixies, I mean, I'm really excited for this mashup. Pixies versus Sonic Youth is an age-old question.
Yeah, there are two bands I've always kind of associated with each other. They're, you know, the dawn of the roots of the alt rock I grew up with in the 90s, two bass players named Kim. It seemed like a pretty obvious matchup, but which would you go for? Let's start with Lena. Lena, between Teenage Riot and Where Is My Mind?
This is terrible.
Okay.
I hate this question for many reasons, but one of them is because when I make the choice that I knew I was going to make from the start, I will have once again failed the vibe check.
I don't think you can't fail this.
I don't know. I think you, we'll see. My suspicion is that for some people, when I say that if we're just doing the songs side by side, I think I probably would give it to the Pixies. Maybe. I do go back and forth, but like I keep landing on, if I'm talking about a song as a song, like with a beginning and a middle and an end, that's still avant and weird and of that time. I don't know. I'm just more likely to go back to that one. Whereas like if I want a vibe, I'll just listen to that whole Sonic Youth record. Like I can just listen to that thing clean through, I guess, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. I don't know. Like I said, I look forward to a lot of tweets about how I've failed, which is fine. Here we are.
I don't know why you think you can fail this. There's not a wrong answer here. There really isn't.
What if I said that what I was really rooting for was Steve Albini? Would I still be okay?
I think we all
have. Like I still have. I still passed.
I don't. You are plugged into a vibe that I am not familiar with, because I don't know why you would think there's going to be an unpopular answer.
Steve's done very well on Blue Sky.
Yes, he's always tweeting.
He's very good at that Blue Sky, whatever those are. He does that. But, you know, I really like the, what was the term that I'd come up with? Weaponized room tone that he does. Like, that has always been the thing that I like best about his engineering. And so, like, it's there. It's there on this record. And I am a strong appreciator of it. I know that he was not always very warm on this record. He has since rewritten some history, which I'm going to let him have it. I think he does some really remarkable stuff here. And I think also that this song in particular is really something else. I mean, it's no Cactus, but it's something. It's a good one. Cactus is another track on that album. Sorry, I'm done.
For the record, Steve Albini produced the Pixies' Surfer Rosa, in case that wasn't clear.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Todd.
Speaking for myself, I was pretty sure that I was going to come in here and say the Pixies, because I'm way more into the Pixies than I am for Sonic Youth. I saw them live in 2004, back in the before days. Sonic Youth, I had to like work to get into, which back in the day I was willing to do the work because I was just getting into music.
What was the first song of theirs that you heard? Do you remember?
Of the Pixies?
No, of Sonic Youth.
I think it was Teenage Riot, actually. That sounds right to me. And then, like, literally just 2 minutes before I signed in here, I was like, but Teenage Riot is, like, a giant of alternative rock. Like, it is, like, the blueprint for everything that came after. And honestly, Where Is My Mind was never my favorite Pixie song. I think that was the first Pixie song I ever heard. And I was, because of Fight Club, and I was just kind of not really into it. I was way more into Doolittle and so on. And the albums that came after, Trompe Le Monde and stuff like that. I'm not sure. I think I might go with Teenage Riot here.
I'm all ready, right, to be in the minority.
Well, JL, where do you land on this?
This is a very difficult question. Art is about meaning and execution, right? And Where Is My Mind and Teenage Riot both achieve exactly what they're trying to achieve. So the question is really a matter of taste, right? I mean, I personally am just the more that you do music, the more of a taste I think you get for the more esoteric blends, just because you're trying to push yourself harder and harder. And so, at least for where my head is at right now, it's easily Sonic Youth in this particular case. But
that's where your mind is at. Where is your mind?
I would say that I appreciate Where Is My Mind as a standalone piece of art in the same way that I appreciated seeing Fish at Madison Square Garden, in which I'm really proud of it for being as successful as it is and doing whatever it's trying to do. And I do like the Pixies quite a bit. My dad raised me on Frank Black solo tapes in the car in the minivan, which
what a thing to grow up on
in the car. I know. Yeah, Sonic Youth in this case, it's undeniably the cool. It's the cool factor with Sonic Youth.
It's true. There's a different. Well, is there? I guess there is. There's a difference between a song that's like, "What if Jay Maskus was president?" or "This weird fucking fish won't leave me alone." Apparently, allegedly,
it is strange to talk about the Pixies as like the more normie friendly band, because they were like the weirdest band I'd ever heard. And when I was like a teenager in the 90s, they were, you know, like this insane guy screaming about slicing up eyeballs. And then kind of slowly, I think largely because of Fight Club, it feels like they're very popular now. And when you say the cool factor for Sonic Youth, like the Pixies were the cool factor. Like there's literally a Dandy Warhol song called Cool as Kim Deal.
I mean, people do like Kim Deal. But like even now, like if we were going to do it's 2024, mm-hmm. who's cooler, Kim Gordon or Kim Deal? I mean, I've heard that new Kim Gordon record. That thing kind of coasts quite a bit. Like it kind of carries in a pretty major way. That record rules. Anyway, I don't know. Kim Deal's good. We did another episode about her.
That's right. I feel like that was like a big thing to getting the Pixies out into the world. That the fact that they had the Breeders that came after.
Yeah, so that one song that had no business being on the radio and yet was on the radio. A thing that my buddy Chris keeps pointing out every time I talk about that particular episode where we did the Breeders versus Veruca Salt. He was like, you have to give it to the Breeders for having a song that has an intro that does not feel like it has any business being on popular radio at all. And yet somehow it was consistently fucking everywhere. That's important. I was like, I cannot deny that is true.
What was you guys' introduction to Sonic Youth?
I heard Bull in the Heather. I think that was the very first song I ever heard.
Where did you hear it? On the radio? Because you were plugged into this stuff before the internet, right?
No, I did not hear it on the radio. I believe, I don't think I'm making this up, but I think what happened was I went to a Tower Records of some kind, and they had that record that was just available to listen to. And I listened to the first song on that record. Well, no, I listened to Bull and the Heather because it was the recommended track. And I was like, great, I will buy Experimental Jet Set, Trash and No Star. And then I did. And I was not ready for it. But it's a good record.
My first introduction to Sonic Youth was via Guitar Hero, Cool Thing. I remember at the time, the only thought I had was, this is a really easy song to play on Guitar Hero.
Well, it's super hard to play on Rock Band drums, I can tell you that.
The drums are hard, but the guitar part is just easy. It's not, it's nothing. I don't know. A Goo remains my favorite Sonic Youth record. But
absolute same. That's kind of why it took me a little bit to get into Sonic Youth, because at the time, the number one album, the one you had to get, was the one with Teenage Riot on it, Daydream Nation. And I just couldn't get into that. I felt a little bit like Juno. Like, it's just noise. I liked Goo a lot more, and I liked the one after that, the one with Sugar Cane on it. What's that one? Crap. Dirty. It is weird to think that Sonic Youth were poised to become like a big rock band like Pearl Jam or the Smashing Pumpkins or stuff like that, because I remember there was hype for them that they were going to be like the next big alt rock band. They were like, it was going to be Nirvana and then Sonic Youth, and that didn't quite happen. I feel like I never heard Sonic Youth become like big hit makers on the radio or even on alt rock radio. It seems insane to think that was ever going to happen.
I agree. But it could have. There's like a million alternate universes where that absolutely happened. Yes, absolutely. You don't think so? Listen, those are all better worlds than the one we're in, so I choose to believe they exist. It just feels like a step in the right direction. Sonically, why would you say that you prefer Teenage Riot? Like, if we're just talking sound-wise, what about it works? Because I feel like that's sort of the thing that I notice in a lot of music from the last couple of years, is that there are a lot of elements from the soundscape of this record that I hear in other bands.
Including one of the ones we have in the studio today.
What? Anyway.
A friend of mine likes to say that if you're making a song that isn't whack, then you're doing it wrong. Like, the song has to be at least a little whack. And what's cool about Teenage Riot is that there's a haze to it that feels at least for me, quite reminiscent of or in line with the kind of shoegaze resurgence we're seeing today. Like bands like Teeth and Tagabo, I feel owe a lot to Teenage Riot and to that era of Sonic Youth. And you know, the sonics on that song are unpredictable. It feels how it wants you to feel, and it nails the affect. Like it nails that haze and that losing yourself in the feeling.
Yeah, I think there's a nice drone to it. And something that had kind of occurred to me just thinking about the particular tone of that record, right? Because like I look at like, let's say bands that are the ones that sort of predate, I guess, like in the alternate universe where we didn't do these two bands, we might have done like Husker Du versus Dinosaur Jr., right? Like, I think it's interesting that if you look at like, let's say, like a Zen Arcade, like the first major Husker Du record, and then you look at like, let's say, I don't know, an album that came out like 2 or 3 years later, like, I think that there's a big difference in the soundscape of what they're doing because like, it's a lot crunchier, it's a lot louder, it's a lot more metal inspired at first, I think. And then I think as you get later, you hear that like there is more of that drone, more of that like, I don't know, almost like a peaceful noise that I think Sonic Youth plays a huge part in sort of standardizing. So I think it's really worth noting that like even bands that predated, right, like the bands that influenced this band then turned around and were like, shit, we should sound a little more like Sonic fucking Youth.
That is absolutely true. It feels to me like the Pixies were also extremely influential in a different way. Like you said, like that you have to be a little whack.
A little whack.
A lot of the 90s alt rock was extremely whack or extremely wacky, like with the silly voices and the novelty lyrics, the, you know, the Beck and the Presidents of the United States of America and all that stuff. I feel like the Pixies were just like outright sillier. Like Frank Black was like up there talking about slicing up eyeballs and aliens and stuff like that. And I feel like that is a humongous influence on basically all the rock I was listening to when I grew up. Like no one sounds like Frank Black.
There is something electric about the guitar line that they choose on Where Is My Mind. There's a saying that my dad likes to say that if you're able to play a simple guitar like and get stuck in someone's head, like the best guitarists are people who play less, you know? And there's something right about both of these songs that make that clear. But if you're able to create an iconic simple lick with even just an arpeggio on electric guitar, like once again, it's like fish at MSG. It is an incredible achievement of songwriting. It's just, it doesn't match that level of personal taste in art. I don't know. Being whack, right? What is whack? Whack is weird. Whack is freaky. Being wacky is funny. Sometimes you can turn the whack dial too high and then you wind up, you know, with like Adam Sandler and Grown Ups or something. It's like wacky, you know. But you know, if you keep it in that whack, you know, whack zone, the goal of Teenage Riot, I think, is to make you both appeased and uncomfortable, something that Sonic Youth is quite good at.
Yeah, the idea of Teenage Riot, literally a teenage riot, and literally a world where Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. is president. It feels like there's a lot of the alternative revolutionary ideas, like we're going to change the world, we're going to destroy everything, the more politically engaged side of alt rock. And when I hear Where Is My Mind, literally the question is, where is my mind? And to me, that speaks to a lot more of like the alienated side of alt rock, the kind who were like not necessarily trying to change the world, but like wanted something that expressed their angst and their confusion and their, like, especially Kurt Cobain, like the just like disgust and misery of being alive. That's what I hear from Where Is My Mind. I feel like these really are the two songs that created the entire 90s.
It predates doomerism in a way, right? I mean, it's been well documented that Generation X is at least culturally a more reactionary and conservative generation statistically, in the United States at least. And musically, something interesting about the tie there is one must wonder what Rage at Nothing really ultimately means or stands for, right? I mean, Woodstock 99, right? I mean,
Did you say Tyler?
No, Woodstock 99, you know?
Oh.
Like that kind of angst and aggression at nothing, ostensibly, I think is rooted in the introverted, right? Whereas My Mind is an introverted song. Yeah. Teenage Riot feels more rebellious and revolutionary in its spirit and in its affect. It's trying to make people feel that.
That's this is a weird dichotomy to make when the primary image people have of Where's My Mind is buildings blowing up.
But like, for what? What are the buildings blowing up for?
What are the buildings blowing up for? That is absolutely correct. Where Is My Mind was the absolute correct way to end that movie.
Let me explain it to you. The reason why the men were blowing up the building... It doesn't matter. it's not really about anything. Although Where's My Mind is like, I don't know. I don't want to compare it to prop comedy, but like there are certain conventions that are used. Like you said, like there is the use of an arpeggio, right? And it evokes something that doesn't necessarily have to have any specific meaning at all, right? Like that arpeggio played with that guitar using that pedal, recorded the way that Albini did it, like evokes a very specific mood. And even if there were no lyrics, you would know what that mood was. And similarly, the use of the echo effect on Kim Deal's voice in the background, right? Like, these are, to me, like the two standout things that like make the song what it is. And I think it's funny that one of them is just like some really heavy echo on a voice. That was, by the way, like the original concept, I guess. Steve was like, we don't have a lot of space to record. We were going to record this in the bathroom. Because he thought like, well, I'll get some like legitimate echo out of that. Like that'll do. And like, you know, fair play to Steve Albini again. Like he's the person responsible for The Sound of In Utero, which is like probably the most important record of my lifetime. For me personally, not for the world. But it's silly. It's silly that was what he did. Cause like it is, it's like these sort of like very basic things that work together in a way that evokes something without having to say anything. And you get the sense that like, if you paid too much attention to what was being said, maybe it would mean less. Like, I think it just is the sound on its own is kind of why. Well, I don't know if that makes it good art or bad art. That's not really a thing.
It's one of the greatest rock songs of all time.
I mean, I like it. I like it a lot. I also like the idea that that things are recorded in the bathroom, but I don't like that we have bedroom pop and garage rock, but no bathroom pop, which is really what I feel the genre of at least one of these two songs is. And there are lots of other songs that you could describe as bathroom pop. I'm just putting it out there. This is a thing that could be started at any time.
They really missed an opportunity with recording Tub Thumping.
That's terrible. But
you've
but
come to the right podcast with that kind of joke.
Yeah. You'll be invited back.
Okay.
Let me say, as far as that bathroom echo goes, I had no idea that sound at the beginning of the song that goes was Kim Deal singing. I thought it was a guitar line or some kind of instrument. I was genuinely shocked. I was like, no, that's just Kim singing. It did not sound like a real voice to me. It sounds so ghostly. I thought for sure this was just more guitar.
Yeah, it's a little surprising just because, like, again, I think of Albini as a producer and an engineer. Like, his whole thing is, like, what does it sound like in the room? That's it. Like, that's the reason why drums on his records sound the way that they do. And by some metrics is like the best thing about him as a producer is that he's able to capture drums in that way. But like
the drums on Where Is My Mind are fantastic. Just superb.
Yeah. I mean, like this is again, this is like our great debate, Todd, which is that like you like
Nevermind and I Have Always Felt In Utero as a superior record. And really the reason for that, when you come down to it, is the sound of the fucking drums on that whole thing are just unreal. And also there's a song called Radio Friendly Unit Shifter. And I like that. I like that.
Yeah, I do genuinely feel that Nevermind versus In Utero is going to be like the dividing line between us forever. And it is definitely the dividing line between these two songs.
I am. I'm fine with being the cool one.
No, I've always been extremely basic. And somehow over the last 20 years, the Pixies have drifted towards basic.
I was going to say, I mean, I'm happy for them that they can continue making money off of this song because of Fight Club. Like, good for them. My understanding is that if somebody says, hey, we'd like to use this song in X commercial, movie, TV show, I don't know, shadow play. The question is, how much are you going to pay me? Doesn't matter. Go ahead. Go nuts. Which I think is really the actual problem, right? I think that this song is diluted in a way that Teenage Riot simply isn't. I don't think that Teenage Riot is a song that I'm likely to hear in a car commercial, or when James Wan makes a horror movie where a lady murders backwards, you know, but I do expect to hear the Pixies there 100%.
Yeah, that is, like I said, like in the post Nirvana revolution, the Sonic Youth was poised to be like really big. They were like, you would see them on MTV and stuff like that. And that sounds insane to me now. Like, they have like not a single song where I would expect to hear them in a movie soundtrack. And I don't think I ever have. Literally the only time I've heard them mentioned in pop culture was Juno, where Juno didn't like them.
Really says a lot about Juno, I feel. Both the character and that whole movie.
And the one who did, the guy who did like Juno was kind of an ass. Like a anyway, loser.
That
who
was our
living
podcast on the movie Juno.
I have plenty of Sonic Youth songs, which I think like rank among the best of 90s alt rock. Dirty Boots and Bull in the Heather and Cool Thing. But I cannot imagine them being played on the radio. I cannot imagine them popping up in even like a cool movie soundtrack. They just do not sound like that kind of band to me. Am I wrong?
Wait a minute. Hang on. How much play in the popular culture did Portishead get? Because I feel like, especially like some of the more acidy stuff on their second record, I can feel again like the influence of Sonic Youth on it, even though it's also trip hop, which makes a lot of sense because, of course, that new record that we were talking about with Kim Gordon has a little bit of the trip hop on it, which is kind of neat. It's a bit of a full circle moment. What was I talking about, Todd?
I feel like trip hop has more of a foot in pop than Sonic Youth ever had. For one, it's literally called trip hop.
I guess. I don't know, man. Like, some of that stuff is kind of whack in the best way possible. I don't know.
It was weird for me to see Portishead become like the cool band of 30 years ago. I hear Portishead pop up all the time. It was they got a shout out in Fantastic Four.
They did?
Yes. Kate Mara in Fanforestick was listening to Portishead and she says,
that's a crime and someone belongs in jail. That's it. That's not allowed. Not in I was gonna say my Fanforestick, but it's definitely not mine. I don't want it. That's terrible. Yeah, it's weird. I had no idea that is what happened. That's a nightmare. I don't know, but like, people listened to Bjork on the radio. Like, I don't know, man. Like, it doesn't feel that far out of field that it could have happened. Like, there are a lot of artists that are very weird that still manage to get a lot of public attention. I don't think, like, Bjork got attention because... because of the music videos, maybe I've talked myself out of it. Does Sonic Youth have any music video as good as literally any of Bjork's music videos? That's the question.
I feel like they had some decent music videos. I'm trying to think. It was like, I think Youth Against Fascism, that was a good video. Am I thinking of the right one?
I genuinely don't remember.
No, they were never a music video band.
See, there's your flaw. You put a little music video on that thing. That's a whole different ball of wax, a whole different kettle of fish, a whole different third metaphor that doesn't actually make any sense. I have a dumb question. JL, I wanted to talk about music videos that you've been putting out recently. When you think about making a music video, like what is the process? So like you put out Beethoven a little while ago, and you have another one I think that'll be out. Is there a video with Devorah or no?
Yeah, there is.
Okay. So that means that there will be two music videos out.
There will be
how
more.
Important is a music video in 2024, and how do you approach creating them?
It's so funny to hear that there's even a minor amount of shade towards Sonic Youth for not making the most memorable music videos.
I don't know.
That's not shade. That's not shade. That's just who they were. I'm not saying they should have or could have.
Making a music video in 2024 is usually quite onerous and largely a PR exercise. That being said, what we try and do and what we encourage other artists to do with their music videos is to lift up perspectives and ideas that otherwise are not being injected into like the social media stream, because it's better to make culture that stands for something like Sonic Youth than not to. And also to try and make it visually engaging so people watch it. Make sure people try and watch your music video. Other than that, it's fun to do. Do it with your friends. Do it with your family. Gosh, I used to make music videos when I was like a kid too. I mean, it's making art, generally speaking, is a better way to spend your time than many of the things that people might be doing, especially in a society that we're living in now, where things are slightly crumbling. Music videos is art. What do you think as a piece of art is the most successful music video in your opinion? Like the best, just like if you think about it on a pure awe-inspiring art music video.
Okay. Well, that I feel is maybe a different question than just like what's the best music video, because like the best MTV music video is always going to be Thriller, just on a popularity level, and it's interesting, but like it's a B movie
because it's Michael Jackson.
Right, but it's Landis, who was a terrible human being, but it is like I'm
disqualified because it's too obvious. But
well, I mean, it is, but it's like I think would probably ultimately be the most commercially successful in that they just did a perfect aping of a B movie, and everybody likes a B movie. If we're talking about like, oh gosh, just like straight
for the record,
up,
I think I was thinking of Cool Things. Cool Thing. That's a very good video, or at least it's a fun video where it's Sonic Youth looks like the coolest band in the universe in that video.
Todd, do you have a good answer for this music video thing? I wasn't prepared. I'm a fool.
I mean, 'cause
like there's a million good videos that like spoke to me in some fashion, but like the biggest one is kind of hard to choose.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, we were already talking about Nirvana because they were they were great music video artists, but also because they were such big boosters of Sonic Youth and vice versa. I love being basic. Smells Like Teen Spirit still hits for me. It has not dulled in the tiniest bit since the first time I heard it. And since the first time I saw it. So if that's my answer, as long as we're like sticking in 90s alt rock and trying to,
I don't know. I mean, if I was going to pick Nirvana again, it would probably be Heart-Shaped Box, which again is like just a continuation of what we talked about before. But I don't know. There's so many videos from that era that like, I don't even know how I would.
I was not prepared for that question either.
No, obviously the answer is Britney Spears, Hit Me Baby One More Time. That's the clear, obvious answer. The game changer of all time. JL, do you have an answer to this question? Do you have a thought?
I'd say that Kendrick Lamar's music videos are probably my favorite. Definitely the Kendrick Lamar music videos, with All Right being the best one.
All Right, obviously, yes.
Yeah.
I saw the Pixies live in 2004. and it was pretty clear that all four of these people were not speaking. Like, I was never clear what exactly happened there. I've heard Frank Black is not the easiest guy to get along with, but like, they were there for like one extremely lucrative reunion tour, and I think they still do it occasionally, don't they?
I think so.
Versus Sonic Youth, which if you hadn't seen them already, you missed your shot, right? That's never going to be a thing again.
No, I don't know. That's a real, like, what do you do with a time machine without impacting the timeline in any way, shape, or form? Like, I feel like 90% of it is just going to concerts that you can't go to anymore.
Right. It would have been great to see Sonic Youth in 92.
Yeah. That's like right up there with going to the Bergenfield roller rink for me.
You know how beautiful it would be if we had more artists that felt like that these days? You know, these like heroic figures that just then stopped existing after a while and you could never do it ever again. And it wasn't there because it's trying to sell you something. I wish that happened more often these days.
I agree. I actually very rarely do I find that like reunion tours are not a thing that I have a lot of interest in. I do. I mean, like, I'll say that there are obviously artists and bands that will continue making music and it will be so different from what they were making before that it doesn't bother me. Like, even if I don't like it, I'll respect if someone's making a thing that sounds nothing like what they were making before, because at least they're not trying to just do more of the same. Whether it lands or not, that doesn't really bother me. But like, if a band is just trying to do the same thing over and over again, this is why I didn't like Coldplay in the beginning. And then I disliked them for completely different reasons later.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I disliked them for the same reasons I always did.
That's good to know. I'm glad we talked about Coldplay.
I feel like the Pixies, like, stature has grown mostly since like the late 80s. But it still feels like if you were like to make a ranking of the best whatevers, the best alt rock songs, the best songs of the 80s or whatever, it still feels like Sonic Youth still towers over them.
I mean, they'd be higher on a list. Like if Pitchfork made a list.
Imagine Pitchfork making.
Imagine, if you will, if Anthony Fantano was doing one of his weird rankings. That's not a weird thing. I don't know why. If Anthony Fantano was predictably doing rankings, because it's a thing that people watch on YouTube, he would rank, I suspect, Sonic Youth as S tier and Pixies as like B bordering on A tier.
I mean, the Pixies are A tier.
I know. I'm talking about Anthony Fantano here.
I have no idea what Fantano thinks about the Pixies. He mostly does new stuff. What did he give Kim Gordon's album?
That's a good question. I don't know. We'll have to look it up later.
It's a good record. Check out that record for like the longest time.
Pitchfork likes it. Thank goodness. Still the arbiters of. Seems unlikely that they would dislike it.
I was literally about to say, it's like, of course Pitchfork liked a Kim Gordon album. They love everything Sonic Youth and Sonic Youth adjacent has done. And then it occurred to me, like, no, that is literally the opposite of the case. They gave Sonic Youth the rare 0.0.
Oh, did they?
Yes.
Which one?
I have to go look it up. One of the something from the 2000s.
Oh, well.
I don't know. Like, I think that's one of the things they had to repent for in hindsight.
Again, I kind of feel like the big thing I keep coming back to, which feels like the thing that we keep saying in different ways over and over again, is that the Pixies, for reasons only partly related to the song that we're talking about, got really big, right? Like, it doesn't really matter why the buildings were blowing up in Fight Club. What matters is the iconography of it, right? Like, that's a big moment, and I'm not going to defend Fight Club. I could. But again, I've already failed the vibe check so hard that I don't want to go that full route. But I do think that just as like a thing that exists in film history, just that one moment is a thing people remember. And as a result, because the song was so perfectly picked for the moment, they're inextricably tied. And as a result, everybody knows this song, but it's exposed in a way that I don't know is really primarily about the Pixies or even about the song, which I think is interesting. Like I said, like I made the joke about that there was a James Wan movie that came out a couple years ago. And part of the core plot was that this woman, spoiler alert for this film, has a kind of an alternate personality that controls the body half of the time. And they use Where Is My Mind as like an orchestral sort of motif in the background. And I heard it and they hadn't revealed where the story was going. And I was like, you've kind of tipped your fucking hand. Like, I know what's going to happen now. The sound cue told me. And that to me is so telling of why the song exists in the way that it does. Not that it's not musically great, but like it's big because of reasons that exist so much outside of the song itself. Whereas to me, Teenage Riot is a success purely because of what it sounds like. Like you could talk about how it's about Damascus being president of the United States. Maybe you could talk about how like it's kind of a rallying cry around a lot of New York bands of the time. But really, even if you subtract all of that stuff, it still fucking hits because of the song itself, because of the sounds that it employs, because of the fact that it's a longer song, which is a thing that Sonic Youth had not really done on records prior to this. And I think that that altogether, like, I don't know, man. I just think that, you know, I may prefer one because it's just an easier throw on and listen. But like, if we're measuring something that succeeds as a piece of art, as though we were talking about a music video, perhaps, I would say that Sonic Youth takes it every time.
You know, it's funny. Right around the same time Fight Club hit, there was a big alt rock covers album of the Pixies. I think it was Weezer doing Valoria and Real Big Fish doing a terrible cover of Gigantic. But I feel like at the time that's it's not a ska thing. It's a terrible like blippy little synth pop thing that I really do not recommend.
I'm listening to that when we're done here, like 17 times in a row.
Yeah, I don't know. You've really sold me on this thing you didn't want to sell me on. I mean, don't think that makes sense. You don't hear Gigantic, Real Big Fish and go, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. I feel like the Pixies had like a humongous stamp on the 90s. They did the soft, loud thing. They did the fun, wacky stuff about, you know, Alexander Eiffel and just like offbeat topics like that.
I just like yelling Gigantic over and over again, personally. Like, that's the kind of song that, like, if I suddenly had a bunch of money to go across to, like, Spain or something and get, like, a really good BBL, like, I would want somebody to play that after my ass was Gigantic. And I would feel really good about my choice. And if somebody tried to judge me for it, I think that that person would also, like me, fail the vibe check. Which is nice because it's usually me that does that. But I'm just saying, if I listen to Gigantic because I got a BBL and you judge me for that, you're a bad person. Thank you.
Maybe I'm just a frivolous person, but that's why I always kind of drifted towards the Pixies.
So we do this thing after there's a bit of a ramble where we do these four questions that hopefully make all the ramble make sense. The first question is question of history. One of these songs is going to stick around and the other one is going to vanish like it never existed. For the culture, which of these two songs has to stay?
Ooh, that's hard. That's surprisingly hard. I mean, Where Is My Mind is now like a very common needle drop.
Yes, you've like, you've talked me out of that being the right answer.
Teenage Riot like created... Like it feels like Teenage Riot created this entire scene.
I guess so. All right, here's a genuine question for you. If we take Teenage Riot out of existence, is Silver Rocket good enough?
No.
It's a good track. Track.
It's not Teenage Riot.
I don't know. I'm like trying to look at some of the rest of the record. because I was going to say, like, it's kind of interesting to say, like, if you were to say, like, what's the best song off of Daydream Nation, or like, what's your personal favorite? I think the majority of people would say Teenage Riot. Whereas if you're asking the same equivalent question for the Pixies, I don't know that the majority, but I think that the percentile is a little different. Again, like I said, Cactus, severely underrated track.
For what it's worth, I just looked on Spotify. Where's My Mind is about to hit 1 billion streams.
I'm aware.
Does confetti come out after that happens? Like, does Frank Black do a jig on top of a pile of Bill?
Now, he pretends that he's going to start charging more to use the song in car commercials, but then he doesn't.
The party sponsored by Live Nation.
Yeah. Oh, man. I didn't realize this, but the Pixies.
Has it ever appeared in the metaverse, Todd? This is the real question, because I'll tell you, if that motherfucker's in the goddamn metaverse, that I'm changing my vote. That almost made me hate Snoop Dogg, and you know how almost I love Snoop Dogg. he betrayed me in that moment.
I think it's safe for the time being.
Okay.
But like, wow, I didn't realize how much the Pixies are destroying Sonic Youth on the old Spotify.
Oh, yeah. That is not surprising at all.
That's why Sonic Youth wins. It's also why it's okay if it doesn't stick around. Like, if Teenage Riot is forgotten by the cultural memory, that is why it is cool. Is because it, like, that's how culture functions. Where Is My Mind? It's going to stick around and is the functional equivalent of Amber by 311.
I feel like even if it's lagging behind in streams, like, its influence is much bigger. I feel like that is, I'm pointing towards Teenage Dream on this one. Teenage Riot.
Teenage Dream is a Katy Perry song.
Ugh, boy.
You love Katy Perry.
Boy, it tells you how out of my depth I am in this conversation.
I mean, I think that's right. Because even if it is forgotten in the sense that, like, it existed, but then people didn't listen to it regularly, if you listened to music ever, you would hear its influence still. Whereas I'm not really sure there's a lot of other songs that I listen to and go, that one was really influenced by Where Is My Mind. Like, I don't know that that happens with much frequency at all, if I'm being honest. And that kind of fundamentally makes it the less important one. Like, I'm sure we could put something else when those buildings fall. Surely. Something else. They could just play some Meatloaf. He's in the movie. Just throw it in there. What's the diff?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going with Teenage Riot on that one. Next.
All right. What is the second? Oh, you can experience Soup to Nuts, the entire creation of one and only one of these two songs. What is the one that you wish that you could, like, sneak in and see how the sausage got made?
Teenage Riot.
How come?
The sound of that song is nuts. As an audiophile, I would want to see that recorded. I would want to see the setup. I'd want to sit there and study.
Speaking as someone who doesn't have any, like, engineering experience, I think I would prefer Where's My Mind just to see them try and record in a bathroom.
Yeah, I mean, like, so here's the thing. I feel like almost every band has recorded at least one song in the bathroom. JL, have you ever recorded a song in the bathroom?
Yes. I during the lockdown, I would demo constantly in the bathroom. The echo is far less fun if you're not making this song, though. When you want to get rid of the echo, you want it to go away. You get tired of bathroom echo pretty quickly.
Yeah, I think that, like, just I might take Where's My Mind, if only because my understanding is that Steve Albini was awful. And I just want to watch it happen. I want to be there so that I can report back as a purely objective observer just how bad he actually was at the time. Not to upset his apple cart. Steve Albini, again, is doing fine on Blue Sky. But I just want to know, for me.
I would like to say, for the record, at least for me, it would be a dream to work with you, Steve. If you're listening to this right now,
Yeah.
He's online enough. He listened to Why She off of our EP once. I sent it to him and he was like, oh yeah, this whole trans rock thing, like this is pretty cool. Which is funny if you listen to the song. It's a song about when I transitioned. And, you know, I think it's a challenge. Like I remember hearing an interview with Nirvana where they explain their difficulties working with Steve Albini, and it sounds like the most fun, you know, like you have to get in there and you have to do the whole thing in three takes or else you lose the game. Unless you lose the game, you lose all the money at the end of it. It's like going into a cash machine.
Yeah. I mean, without that weird thing that they did on that record, we wouldn't have Tourette's, everybody's favorite song off that album. And by that, I mean, I heard that album when I was 13 and I really liked that song because it's just like, there's no mic set up on Kurt. It's just room tone and Kurt screaming a lot, about absolutely nothing at all. And I used to do an impression of him in the back of the bus for my junior high school, because people would not want me to do it. And I'd be like, it's like when I would run into a wall. It's like, hey, do you want to watch me run into a wall at top speed and then hurl myself on my back? People go, no. And I go, here I go. And it was the same thing with Tourette's. And yeah, I just don't think that happens without a little bit of cantankerousness. Like it's not a criticism, right? Like I like the idea that Steve Albini is the way that he is kind of difficult, because I think that that's a big part of the reason why some of his best work has turned out the way that it did. I don't have a band, but if I did, Steve Albini is who I would want to work with, because I'm sure it would sound good, because all of his albums sound pretty good, except for Bush's Razor Blade Suitcase.
Wait,
but
sure doesn't.
But that's Bush's fault.
I'm not sure it is. I mean,
no, I'll blame Bush for anything.
Bush?
What?
They're a terrible Nirvana ripoff from the mid '90s that was extremely popular. That I guess people
What's
don't
a
remember.
Song by Bush?
Machine Head, Glycerine.
Oh, Glycerine. Yeah, Glycerine. They're a one hit wonder band?
No, they had many hits.
They had so many hits.
1994 to 1996.
Are you funning us?
No.
Okay. Good grief.
I don't know who Bush is.
Todd, I'm in my mid 40s and it's over.
The president, I think.
Yeah.
No, they were a band that was very popular between the Bushes, between Bush 1 and Bush 2.
Betwixt the Bushes.
Yeah.
That's it. But they were never, I don't think they were really a popular band during either era, really.
No.
I heard a lot of Glycerine when I was like a kid in the school bus, on the bus radio. Yeah.
There's probably some kid that was in the back doing an impression of Gavin Rossdale, even though nobody wanted them to, would be my guess.
Listen.
All right. Third question. Remind me which one that is.
Gosh. Okay. The third question, Megan Thee Stallion, who for some reason we decided is a person that listens to the show and would weigh in on every one of these songs. She's going to make a playlist that is only going to have one of these two songs. Which one of those two songs deserves to be considered hot girl shit?
Oh, it's Teenage Riot. Teenage Riot.
Teenage Riot.
I mean, Where Is My Mind is a song to, I guess, like, it's not a song to go out to.
The song Incel's like. It's like Creep. It's like, you know.
It is like Creep, yes. Sun. Black Hole Sun. Yeah, these are good comparisons. Teenage Riot is a song you can have a Teenage Riot to. Hot Girl Riot.
There you go. I feel like it would be in an anime of some kind. Like, is there not like some kind of like FMV of Akira, but it's got Teenage Riot in the background? Because if not, there should be.
Yeah, actually, I've seen people in all black posting selfies with Teenage Riot on their Instagram. That is definitely a thing I see now. Still, it's hot girl shit.
All right. Question number four. The most important question we ask, not just of the show, but most important question in all of human creation. William Shatner, thespian, equestrian, singer, we're going to give it to him. He's going to do a William Shatner version of One and Only One of these two songs. I don't know why, but why? Which one of these songs has to be shat upon? Todd, this is the worst. This is the one and only time I feel that the Shatner question, I'm not sure it really works. Except yeah, that the Pixies are going to win this, and I think it's going to be the reason why the song on the whole loses.
These are not both not very lyrical songs. The lyrics mean that much to you or stick in your brain. I tried to do Where's My Mind at karaoke a couple weeks ago, and I bombed it completely because it turns out I don't actually remember how it goes. Where Is My Mind at least has the chorus. I feel like Shatner could put a lot of oomph in the Where Is My Mind.
Yeah, I mean, he just turned 93, you know. And I feel like there at any point in his life, he could have been asking this question, but no more so than now.
Yeah, versus I don't think even when he was a teenager, he could sell a Teenage Riot.
No.
So I think that one has to go to the Pixies. I don't think that does them any favors, though. I can think of many Pixies songs that would be great for him to sing. Like pretty much all of them. Monkey Gone to Heaven, Wave of Mutilation. There's some real good shit in there, especially if he tried to do it as animatedly as Frank Black does.
Todd, you either die a hero or you live long enough to become the kind of person that picks the William Shatner song. It's been an illuminating experience. JL, would you agree with our conclusions on which of these two songs deserves the Shatner treatment? It's a very important question, so be thoughtful.
I was trying to imagine William Shatner doing Teenage Riot, and the first thing that came to mind, if anyone listened to the Lou Reed Metallica album. The Lou Reed Metallica album. It was essentially the same thing, which is why I'm going to have to give it to Teenage Riot. You know, look, if it's whack, it would be so whack to listen to him do that. I agree with it. I immediately thought of Where Is My Mind, and that is why it loses. Fully. The fact that I can immediately imagine the whole bit, him on a stage, it's at the Oscars after Frank Black dies, but they don't get the joke. They don't get the joke. They think it's serious. Oh, man. Who cast that one?
This is the worst day of my life.
I would like to hear William Shatner do Youth Against Fascism. That could be fun. Or a cool thing. Are you going to liberate us girls from male white corporate oppression? These are terrible things to put into William Shatner's
it
mouth.
It would be fun just to hear him say those words. But then the world has to end.
Yes.
That's how that goes. He says that, and then the four horsemen appear, and it's all over.
Does William Shatner not have a cameo yet?
I don't think he does. No,
I don't think he needs it. I think he kind of did all of his cameo equivalent in the 1970s when he was in shit like The Devil's Reign and stuff like that.
Yeah, when he was
a highly classic
out
of his film, by the way, The Devil's Reign, which stars William Shatner and John Travolta, where supposedly who was the guy? The guy was the head of the Satanic Church at the time. Apparently, was like
Anton LaVey.
Was like talking to John Travolta at the time, and like John Travolta was like, maybe Satan will help me in my time of need. And I was like, ah, man, a better choice than Scientology, but the least surprising thing that you'll hear. Anyway, I'm glad I could talk about this William Shatner film, The Devil's Reign. You can buy it on Blu-ray through Severin.
All right. Okay. Well, first, the way this goes is that first I have to read the reader comments. So here is what our fine patron said. Lucas writes, I heard a cover of Where Is My Mind in a commercial for whatever a couple of months ago, and that's why I'm voting for Teenage Riot. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, yes. It's been a rough day for me, but yes.
All right. Connor Rankin writes, even though I gave my vote to Where Is My Mind, I got a shout out Blister in the Sun by Violent Femmes. That is quite possibly the original nerd punk song / band that everyone mistakes for being a 90s thing.
That song beats both of these. Easily.
It is the 90s song I have ever heard in my entire life, and I cannot believe it was written in 1983. That makes absolutely no sense to me at all.
Violent Femmes, not crap, no waffle factor. This is 10 out of 10.
All right. Theodora writes, can I filibuster? I refuse to let either of these songs be declared better than the other. Equality for Sonic Youth and the Pixies.
Nope, that's not how this goes.
No,
it's you have to choose one, and apparently there was a right answer.
Jace writes, "Where's my mind slaps, but I have a lot of negative thoughts on Black Francis, the proto Billy Corgan."
What's wrong with Billy Corgan? I'm kidding. What isn't wrong with Billy Corgan?
I have never heard a single negative thing about the man. All right. Mr. Spaghetti writes, "My mate recently pointed out to me that Where Is My Mind kind of sounds like a slowed down cover of the theme from The Office. This has since ruined the song for me, and I have to know, so now do you all."
Mr. Spaghetti, why have you forsaken me?
All right. Emily Mickelson writes, "Where Is My Mind is a fun little song that got popular because of a movie. Teenage Riot is a magnum opus. So said my husband when I asked him how to vote." Quote, quote, "It's like comparing A Hard Day's Night to Baba O'Reilly."
Wait, what?
I don't know. Like, the Beatles wrote a little cute little song before they got serious, and Baba O'Reilly is like, you know, a mammoth of rock.
Oh.
I get it. I get the comparison. All right. Sonny writes, "It's wild to think the band beloved by Kurt Cobain and played a role in getting Nirvana signed to a major label is seen as the underdog now."
But that's it. You don't think that's exactly the band that Kurt Cobain would like?
Well, he loved both these bands.
That's like Kurt's whole thing.
Yeah, he loved both these bands very much. Smells Like Teen Spirit was like he called it a ripoff of the Pixies formula exactly.
If you ask me, like, what are the bands that Kurt Cobain most prefers, it is of the you've probably never heard of it variety, but not in a shitty way. Is there a way to do that without being shitty? Because that's the thing that Kurt did.
Yeah. All right. One last one. Pasha Washa writes, "I just realized that I have spent untold years thinking Sonic Youth was the same as Semisonic. I won't be making that mistake after listening to Teenage Riot."
I gotta go.
It's closing time.
Oh, that's who made that song.
Yes.
Okay.
Help.
You all right?
I'm okay. It was painful. Again, I'm turning 44 in like a month, and I feel it every day.
All right. Well, those were the comments. Now we must do the results. Lena, JL, who do you think won? I had my thoughts about who was going to win and by how much before I saw the results. But you tell me what you think the results are.
I think that if the Pixies take this, that somehow it I'm going to get in trouble in life. So I hope they lost.
So it's like the Pixies song is very like high audience score, low critics score.
The critics love the Pixies. They just love the Sonic Youth more.
Right. Well, no, but like this song in particular, I think if you asked a critic, they'd probably say it's overrated versus Sonic Youth is chronically just on. I feel revered.
I feel like even 10 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case.
Where's but my it mind might be the case. Sir?
Yeah. Well, here's how it went down. For a total of 447 to 174. That is a 72-28% split. Where Is My Mind? Indeed, the Pixies took it by a lot, and I am not surprised in the tiniest bit. Like, that is exactly what I thought was going to happen, if not more so.
Is this our last episode? Is this how it all ends?
I don't know why you have such a weird reaction to that.
I don't know. I mean, I know that it's right, but like occasionally when the people vote my way, I think, but you've done it wrong. Because I knew I was wrong coming in, right? Like I knew I was wrong. Occasionally it happens. Occasionally you prefer a song that you know fundamentally is inferior, but it just doesn't matter. I saw those buildings done fell and that just changed my whole brain.
I don't know. You have weird reaction to things. There's nothing controversial happening here.
Reddit will have something to say about this, Todd.
Well, thank you for coming up, JL. Thank you for being on our podcast. I hope we get you a few more viewers or listeners, because I did like that album, which is about to come out like in a couple weeks.
The album, yes. Viewers, listeners, consumers, not consumers. Come One, Come All. We're putting out this record. It's incredibly freaking loud. And if you like the Pixies or you like Sonic Youth, you'll really fuck with it. It's called Pink Balloons. It's out April 17th. If you want to hear the next DC punk rock shtick, you know, if you liked Fugazi, if you like Bad Brains, hopefully we're following in their footsteps, or at least enough to make a decent footprint. You know, it's a pleasure to be here, Lena and Todd. You know, I can't imagine what I'm going to do tomorrow, but hopefully I'm not comparing these two very classic songs, or I don't know, maybe it'll be a little more podcasts. These scenarios and press cycles are, I don't know. It's always so surreal. You enter podcast land. Oh.
And thank you, listeners, for listening to Song Versus Song. If you would like more, we have a Patreon where you can give us money, which we desperately need. We're trying not to beg, but we will if we have to.
You heard what'll happen if I get enough money for a BBL. I'll listen to Gigantic like a weirdo. Don't you want that? Give us some money. Thank you. That's not just it. Wait. Oh, wait. It doesn't happen very often. Hey, listeners, did you know that if you give just a dollar, you'll get an access to every single bonus episode we've ever done? And we've been doing them for many years. We don't do like a cutoff or anything. You could sign up for 1 month, download all the bonus episodes, and get out. And that would be perfectly fine. And as far as I'm concerned, that's not just a deal. That's a Kim deal. Thank you and good night.
All right. One last thing. Are you ready for the next episode, Lena?
Yes. Yes. I'm ready to move on from this. One of the most painful experiences of my life, picking the Pixies. What are we doing?
All right. We're going to go like very far from this. We're going to be doing Buy You a Drink by T-Pain versus Smack That by Akon. Smack That All on the Floor. Smack That. I'm looking forward to it.
I am going to be like,
I am going to be not out of my depth. I am exactly that shallow.
I know you are. I can't wait.
All right. Hooray. Thank you. Thank you, JL. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.